Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your owl post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just excited, as always, to be here. But I am only one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the magical Trey Kaufman.
Hello, everyone.
Well, hello.
Hello.
Hello. I like how we always
we could do this for hours, guys.
We could just keep going. Wow. But I feel like we've hit those, like, as we're recording this, it is the summer of 2018, and I feel like we've just kind of hit those dog days of summer where the days seem to drag out forever.
Yeah, someone yesterday on Facebook had a post with a picture, and it was like, oh, pumpkin spice lattes and blah, 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 this fall stuff. Oh, cozy sweaters. And I was like, no, it is too early for that. It is still 100 degrees, like 112 yesterday. Like, it is not fall yet.
No.
Like, as much as I want it to be, I cannot convince myself that it's fall when it's still 112 degrees. So,
well, and
I'm hoping
where we
get
live,
into that mindset sooner.
It's been warm too, so I'm right there with you. It's like it's 90 something degrees, and it just doesn't feel like fall. Now, I can say, and I understand, you know, like when you used to get the catalogs, you know, in the mail, they used to send things to you, and you'd be like looking through a J. Crew catalog, and you're like, why are there sweaters in the summer catalog? Well, they're made for people who like live in the Northwest, for like where, you know, till July, it can be like, a day could be like 60 degrees outside, you know? So anyway,
I feel like I live in the wrong place.
You really do.
I'm not, I can handle the weather, but I would much rather be snowed in than heated in, than sunned in.
I completely agree with you.
Snowed in over sunned in.
Yeah. I mean, I've done both because I've lived in Minnesota where it snows like, you know, a ton, and I lived in Texas, so, and now I live in the Northwest, and it's, for the most part, I'm 100% happy about it, so, yeah. You know what else I'm really happy about, Drea?
That people like us and listen to us, even though we spend 5 minutes going, hello!
I know, it is absolutely what I'm excited about, and they're so much in like with us. Is that they leave us reviews.
There's so much in like with us.
They like us. They really like us.
I like it too.
So we've got a brand new review over on iTunes. And this one says, this podcast must have slipped me a love potion because wow, in all caps. 5 stars. This is by Lauren Sharp. And she says this, I've genuinely looked forward to road trips this summer because I've been able to listen to this podcast. Not only does it keep me awake, but time flies by when I'm listening to each episode because it's gold, all caps. Thanks for taking the time to put this together. Andrea and Matt, you also have great podcast voices, if that's a thing. Which it is. It is
a
thing.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it. I would definitely like to know that I have a voice for podcasting. So thank you so much, Lauren. We are so glad that we have been able to be a part of your summer and your trips. I also frequently do the same thing. I actually just traveled up to Seattle and this last weekend, and I had some podcasts in the queue that I listened to on the way there, so it was wonderful. So we're glad that we've been able to keep you entertained, and thank you so much for listening and letting other people know about the show. So now, if you would like to follow Lauren's example, you can do the same thing on wherever you're listening to your podcasts. You can give us a review and a star rating and let people know what they think. Now, it really does help over in Apple Podcasts or iTunes to do that. It helps more people find the show. So really appreciate everyone who does that. And like we did with Lauren, we'll read your review on the air, no matter what you say. So make sure you do that for us. and we'll call you out. You can also follow the entire network at Join Nerd Party over on Twitter. So make sure you're doing that, keeping up with everything that's going on here at the network. Not just Owl Post, but we have so many great shows for you can check out. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty, where you can interact with all the hosts on the different shows that are happening, especially Dre and I. We love talking to people about Harry Potter over there on our Facebook page. And then, of course, you can find us online at thenerdparty.com, where you can find all the shows that we're doing. Check out all the previous episodes. And if you'd like to send us an email, go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Owl Post, and that email comes to Dre and I, and we'll be able to interact with you that way. So, Dre, we finally, though, this episode, we reached the second task, which I absolutely adore how she starts this chapter. And it's with Hermione yelling at Harry during class. The way that she does this thing where she will have an important scene happen between the kids, and it's just taking place in a class. And what's happening in class is really funny and everything, but the conversation they're having is semi-serious. So I just, there's a lot of whimsy when she does something like this, and it just kind of gets you an idea of what it's like to be at Hogwarts. And I don't know. The beginning of this chapter, I was just like, oh, I want to go to Hogwarts.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I like, they even straight up kind of say that in the book. You know, they're like, oh, well, they can have this conversation because everyone is having so much fun that they're not even paying attention to them. So, you know, because a little bit in, you're kind of like, why are they talking about this in like this big public setting where someone could easily overhear them? So she really just straight up tells you the fact that, hey, they have a good time. So, you know, everyone's having a good time. So it's nothing to be concerned about. It's interesting and it's fun that they are able to use the cover of class to do something like this. So.
Well, and the charm sound class here just sounds really fun because they're doing a summoning charm and a banishing charm. And so they're practicing with like pillows, like bringing a pillow to me and then throwing the pillow away into this box they're supposed to be going to. And like, instead of like people doing it correctly, they keep hitting each other in the head with the pillows. And it kind of sounds like a magical pillow fight.
Yeah. And I really like that Hermione, it's just like, this is that moment where she is so good at what she does that like being good at what she does is like an advantage, right? Because she can have this conversation and she still mastered this and she's still technically doing what she needs to do for class, but she doesn't have to think about it because, you know, like we've already figured this out. She's already got it down. She can literally do it without even considering what's happening. So I thought it was cute. It was a cute little way that she sort of shows and reminds you that she's just very good at what she does. So,
well, and the conversation they're having is so interesting too, because she's trying to get on Harry for not really having figured out the egg yet until now, and he's trying to talk about the fact of all the things he just learned about Snape and Moody and, you know, Dumbledore having Snape's office looked at, and then of course the fact that Snape has been given a second chance and what does that all mean. And so it really builds on everything that happened in that last chapter, but it kind of brings home this whole idea that, you know, Snape is still very much an enigma for these kids as to if he's a good guy or a bad guy or just a jerk.
We as consumers of the product know what's going on already, but overall they kind of don't know, and they're not putting together the clues, which from a place of knowledge seems so obvious. I would be curious to hear from our listeners who are reading through this for the first time if it's as obvious to them as it sort of will be in the long run. But yeah, it's that moment as a reader that you're like, hey, this is it, guys. You want to like shout to them and tell them because it seems so much like they should already know, but it's again one of those nods to the fact that they're just kids, you know. Mm-hmm. They don't aren't thinking about things from the same perspective that maybe an adult would be. So,
well, and I do kind of love this whole thought process, because, you know, Harry is very interested in this, because he says something I think anybody would say, which is, I just kind of want to know what Snape did the first time for him to need a second chance. This is interesting. And so on top of that, though, they can't quite figure out what in the world Mr. Crouch is doing. Like, why is he pretending to be ill? And he can't make it to the ball, but he can be sneaking around the castle at night? This doesn't make any sense. And so, yeah, like you said, there's this whole thing where if you're super smart, you put all this together. If this is your first time, and then if you've read it before, everything is really making sense here, even though it's not making sense for the characters. So it's, I don't know, it is a lot of fun to watch them kind of struggle with both of these things, because they are both answers, and only one of these things will actually be answered for them in this book. The Snape question, right, is going to wait.
The Snape one we get pieces of over the next, mm-hmm, several books and learn a little bit about over time, but it's definitely not the same. We're definitely going to get a conclusion to the questions that we get about Mr. Crouch in this book, but the rest of it, we get somewhat of an answer about that, but the answer we get only leads to more questions.
Yeah.
So,
well, and interestingly enough, too, you know, they get back a letter from Sirius, you know, Harry had told him everything, and so now Harry writes back.
I like that Hermione, though, in that moment, I like that Hermione is the one to be like, answer him real quick. Here's my quill. Send it. Let's go. Like, let's keep moving.
Yeah. Well, it's important, you know, like, she understands the importance of keeping, I guess, an adult in the loop, you know, which is nice. And
it also sounds like the answer's soon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she, yep, wants to make sure he has plenty of time if, yep, he's planning something.
Right. Which he is, because he wants to know when the date of the next Hogsmeade weekend is.
Yeah.
And so,
which Harry was like a week or two out.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, Harry isn't quite sure exactly why he'd want to know that, but he quickly writes the answer back and sends it off again. And so I thought that, you know, I forgot how much more Sirius is involved in the book than he is in the movie, obviously. And
yeah, there's a lot of things that happen, mm-hmm, particularly in this chapter, that are very, very different than in the movie. You get the same ultimate outcome, but they're very different.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I also, what I think it does is that it actually really helps once you get to the fifth book, you know, because you've had more of a relationship. And if you only watch the movies, it doesn't make as much sense.
It just doesn't seem to have the same impact.
No.
I mean, it's still tough, and I think the actors do a good job of selling, mm-hmm, the impact that the fifth book has. But I it definitely is more weighty, mm-hmm, if you've actually read the books. So,
well, and that's something too that's kind of fun here as well. This relationship that they have with Hagrid, and he's finally back, you know, teaching, and he's changed his tactics a little bit in teaching, and continued on with the unicorns, and brought in, you know, two foals, which is really cool. And, you know, he's just as knowledgeable about unicorns as he is about, you know, something with fangs, which I love the way that she writes it, how he seems quite disappointed that they don't have any poisonous fangs. Which was great. But I also, I love too that it continues to be motivation for Harry, who still hasn't quite figured out this task, which, is that, you know, Hagrid's like, you're going to win, you're going to do great. And it's really putting that pressure on Harry to try and figure something out. And even before the night before the task, they still haven't found anything in the library. They've been in the library for weeks together trying to figure this out, and nothing, which Hermione seems to find as a personal insult that the library is failing them, which I may have laughed out loud at that line just because it's really well written.
It killed me. And I can totally see her saying that, and I can totally see, like, Emma Watson, you know, delivering that line. Like, mm-hmm. It's just so perfect. I loved, it was just hilarious. It's that moment where you're just like, all right, bigger picture here. Come on now.
Yeah. And, you know, I can understand why they're all frustrated, though, because they've been looking in these books. They've even been looking in the restricted section. They're not finding anything. And I think that, you know, it also gets worse because, you know, Fred and George show up and say McGonagall wants to talk to, you know, Hermione and Ron. And they're like, well, we'll be back. You know, you get as many books as you can and we'll meet you in the common room. And then they never show up. So Harry is just in panic mode at this point because he has no idea what to do.
And he falls asleep. I like the little moment where he falls asleep and Crookshanks falls asleep in his lap. And then it's just that cat, man. I just love that cat.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's kind of interesting, too, because Harry goes to the library, much like the first movie, with his invisibility cloak. And he is studying all night. And the next thing he knows, he's getting woken up again by Dobby telling him that he has 10 minutes to get to the challenge.
Right. This is the big part here that's so different from the movie. You know, he doesn't have any time to process what's happening. If I remember correctly, he even considers just not showing up because he doesn't know how to do it. I think he says that to Dobby, like, what's the point? I'm not going to be able to do anything anyway. And then at the same time is panicking because 10 minutes to get down to the lake is not really enough time, especially from a dead sleep. He still doesn't know where Ron and Hermione is or why Ron did wake him. And he, you know, kind of goes running off, and Dobby is the one who provides him the solution to his problem, which is interesting.
Yeah. And I love the way he, you know, says that he got it. He's like, I hear things, you know, being a house elf, and I heard of a way that could help Harry Potter. And so I wanted to make sure that he could breathe underwater and save his friend, you know, which is, it's just quite adorable that he keeps calling his Wheezy.
Yeah, his Wheezy.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
He wants him to save his Wheezy.
The thing that I also thought was so much more interesting about this is that the way that the task is described, you know, there isn't that thing in the movie where you have the stand in the lake, you know, everybody's on the shore. And they don't seem to be wearing anything special other than their robes. Yeah, which is also fascinating to me. I feel like I might have wanted to put on a swimsuit for this one.
Right, you would think.
Yeah. But, you know, wizards do things their own way. And I really like her description of Harry and the Gillyweed and what it's like, that experience of basically being turned into fish.
Yes, much more descriptive than we get.
It doesn't sound pleasant. Like, it just sounds pretty awful.
Yeah, basically starts to choke on regular air and, you know, goes underwater and realizes he can breathe. But it's just, it's crazy. Like, just imagine all of a sudden feeling like you were suffocating.
Well, and then it's got to be kind of weird when your, you know, feet and your hands grow into be like webbed and then flippered. It's just got to be a strange sensation. But I like, you know, the underwater stuff is also interesting as well. You know, Harry gets attacked by the Gryndaloes and he's able to fight them off. He runs into Moaning Myrtle, which I was like, oh, this is great. I totally forgot this happens, honestly. And the fact that she actually is the one who kind of gives him some directions, and she helps him again. So it does seem pretty clear that Moaning Myrtle has a favorite when it comes to, you know, corporeal people. She seems mm-hmm. to really like Harry, and she helps him out, and she points him in the right direction to go find, you know, his Wheezy.
Yeah, because it's not as straightforward as the movie mm-hmm. presents it, where he just kind of dives down and there it goes, and he's, you know, magically in the place of more people. Like, he has to find it, which is part of this whole thing, and they've only got an hour.
Yes.
So, you know, it's very different. And so he shows up to these more people, right, which are also very... they're a little different than what's shown in the movie. You know, they have like this greenish gray skin, and he seems to be able to kind of speak underwater, but not really. But, you know, he gets there and is the first one to arrive, which these mer people know and see, you know, and he, they're not as violent as they're made out to be in the movie. Like, the movie, they seem like very angry, dangerous, like, creatures. And here they're just like, we can't help you. And they're kind of like laughing at him as he's trying to free Ron and figure it out. And, you know, it's just a different feeling that you get. Like, this is definitely not meant to be a threat to them. It's just meant mm-hmm. to be like, it's just meant to be something they had to figure out and how quickly they could do it. And how, you know, it was definitely like a knowledge based thing, mm-hmm. Which was different, very different than how they paint it in the movie. So
the description too of the mer people is quite similar to what we get in the book, and not quite as colorful. Right. But the fact that they are much more fishy, you know, like they don't look like the Little Mermaid.
Right.
And so, and I love the description of that, where they live, you know, and then, you know, Harry actually finding, all four, you know, people waiting to be picked up by their person. And my favorite thing in this is Harry picks up a rock to, you know, hack the yeah. ropes. And I'm thinking, you do have a wand in your hand.
And then later uses his wand mm-hmm. to, like, threaten the yes. mer people to leave, you know, let the others go. But
yes,
he had his wand the whole time, but he mm-hmm. used a rock. Like, I just thought it was weird.
I just, that's the thing that I was cracking up with. I was like, Harry, you, I don't know. It's actually something that's very consistent about Harry, though, is that he still hasn't gotten used to the fact that he's a wizard. You know,
yeah, there's just,
it's tough. You know, you haven't been doing this your whole life.
Yeah. Well, and it's a relatable thing, right? Like, we as readers wouldn't be reaching for our wands, right? We would be scrounging around and looking for a rock. And it's another good way to tie in us as readers and make it a relatable situation, and that, like, I can't just mm-hmm. bust out my wand and do the dishes. Like, I have to go do the dishes. So, you know, it's just a nice reminder of that. And then, you know, also kind of makes you giggle when you realize that he uses his wand not 2 or 3 minutes later. And
yep. Yeah.
And still hasn't put together the fact that he could have used his wand
the whole time.
Okay, sweetie.
No, it is great. And I think that's one of the things that she does a really good job in is creating, as we've talked about before, but I mean, just the psychology of the character and not immediately always turning to magic as an answer, because, you know, for most of his life, that hasn't been the answer. And so he just doesn't always think about that first. And I do really like that about him. And then, of course, here we get Harry worried about everybody else. And he's, like, trying to free the other people. And they're like, the mer people are like, no, this you just free your friend and go. Leave the others. And he's so worried, though, that about these other people. And when you think about it, you know, you've got Hermione there, you've got Cho there, and then a girl he doesn't know, but he's pretty sure is Fleur's sister. And
right, process of elimination, yeah. Figured out who that goes to.
But I think it's so fascinating because, you know, of course they all get saved except for Fleur's sister, and he fights his way to save her. And he gets to the top, and his whole frustration once he gets there, realizing, well, of course they weren't going to die, you know, like, because Ron's like, I hope you didn't try to be a hero, you know, Dumbledore's not going to let us die. And Harry is so caught up in the moment that he never even thought about that. But there is this, I don't know, what did you think about that, especially with the book, because it's even more pronounced here.
Yeah, I mean, in the movie, they sort of like go like, well, he wouldn't let us die, but like no one sort of backs up that claim, and it's not quite as strong. You know, in the book we paint, they actually say like Dumbledore safeguards probably would have prevented anyone from dying. But you still have Fleur freaking out that, you know, he saved her sister, and you know, it's never truly answered whether he would have let them die or not. And I kind of didn't like the fact that there was never any real peril to them, because I feel like that's sort of part of the trial, was the psychological element of having the weight of saving someone on you, right? And having to make that choice of, I'm taking my person and I'm going. I feel like that's part of the obstacle. And maybe that's just painted for me because I've seen the movie more than I've read the book. But for me, that sort of, I feel like not having the weight of that there sort of negated the fact that Harry gets a boost for trying to save everyone, you know, because Dumbledore talks to the merperson leader, who tells them that he was the first to arrive and wanted to save everyone, and they, you know, they wouldn't let him. And I sort of feel like the awarding of strong moral fiber is almost a little not appropriate if they were never in any real harm. You know, I don't know. It just, it doesn't resonate as well as it played out in the movie for me. But it also makes more sense that they probably were not going to leave these poor kids on the, I mean, like, what school do you send your kids to that are going to be, you know, bound and strapped to the bottom of a lake without a choice and left there to die? Like, that doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound like that would really work out. But it removes a little bit of, I feel like, the intention behind the trial away. But
yeah, I think it doesn't bother me too much, because the psychology of Harry during the trial, I think, is exactly what you were saying and what they're going for, which is that it's my job to save this person, you know, and that for Harry, you know, showing that moral fiber of that it's more important to make sure everybody's okay than to win. And that is something that is a very, that's just not a trait you saw in anybody else in the challenge, you know? And so, and yes, if he had thought about it logically in a Hermione sense, then yes, he wouldn't have, thought about, oh, that nobody's, you know, going to die, you know, and I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, but I guess if you're going to give him bonus points for that being the nature of his approach, you almost needed to set that expectation somehow. Like, it almost needed to be painted to all of the contestants so that they, I don't know, it doesn't like there's a piece missing. There's a piece missing to that, because I don't know how, like, yeah, he stopped to save them and the merperson told them that, but like, I don't know how you get in Harry's head if you're like, it's one of those things where like it broke the fourth wall for me a little bit. Like, as readers, we know that that's what Harry went through and what his thought process was, but then now the other characters also know that, but they didn't have an opportunity to know that. So it's just a little bit of a breaking point there for me. Like, it's not enough that I'm going to send J.K. Rowling like an email and be like, this is not right. But I mean, all of a sudden, it's one of those things where like all the other characters know something that they have no way of knowing. So it just, I mean, you can kind of draw conclusions, but it's just not a very clear path. It gets a little murky, haha, for me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the whereas in the movie them downplaying that a little bit, it becomes less murky.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess I never really thought about it that way. Well, I got to say, you know, both Harry and Ron get pretty lucky because Fleur kisses them both. So,
oh, yeah, from Avila.
Yeah, there you go. So lucky boys there. And of course, you know, Harry finds himself tied with Cedric, which is fantastic as well because of his moral fiber. And my favorite thing is that as he is walking back up to the castle with Ron and Hermione, he's thinking to himself, when I go to Hogsmeade, I'm getting Dobby a pair of socks every day of the year. For every day of the year. And I was like, that is a really funny way to end the chapter.
It is. I also found it interesting, and I don't know what the purpose of this was. We talk about that Rowling writes books, and it kind of everything she does usually has some sort of purpose to it. You know, he goes and sees Madame Pomfrey, who gives him something warm to drink. Mm-hmm. And then that's the end of it. Like, you don't know what it is or what it's for. And it just seemed like a strange detail that feels insignificant. So I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I don't think it does anything, but I just found it so odd. Like, this to me, this chapter just was kind of clunky. Mm-hmm. Like, she had a great idea, but didn't quite know how to do it. So
I didn't even think about that. I just kind of put that in the same as the other chapter with the task where Madame Pomfrey is doing her normal things.
I'm sure she's just healing them or something to like keep them from getting hypothermia or something. But it's not explained. Like, oh, I drank this and Madame Pomfrey says, this is to keep you from getting hypothermia. You know, like there's just like a missing component to it. And so because she doesn't explain it as well as she does with everything else, it seems to kind of stand out as like unfinished, which sometimes seems significant in her works, right? Like a lot that she's been doing, we talked about with Snape and Mr. Crouch and stuff like that. But this one's just, it's just weird. It just hangs out there. There was no reason, like it was unnecessary. Like there's no reason for it. Could have done without that little section, and it just reads awkward for me.
It's exciting for Harry because they don't have a challenge again until June. So
yay!
Quite a long time.
So he's got
time.
Four more months to stew.
Yes, quite a long time. You know, next chapter, it looks like a friend may return because Padfoot returns. So very excited to dive into that, especially since there's only 10 chapters left.
Yikes, so, we're getting down to it, guys.
We really are. So if anybody wants to catch up with you, though, Drea, and talk some Harry Potter or what they think that potion was, where can they find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's C-O-F-F-M-A-N.
And you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. And I am on Instagram under the same name. You can also find me here on the network with John Mills talking about Star Wars on Aggressive Negotiations every week. And then I am over on the Track FM network talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones on the Orb. And then I do the General Geek Show over there called the 602 Club, which is a lot of fun. Drea's been over there quite a few times, so check us all out over there talking about every fandom that we love. And then last but not least, doing cinema stories with my good friend Courtney, talking about films through the lens of faith. But thank you for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.